Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why X and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for another episode. Hey, guys, WrestleMania is fast approaching, so I hope that everyone has been watching wrestling that you enjoy, whether that is WWE or AEW, the Indies, Classic, or a little bit of all of it. Just watch what you like, watch what you have fun with. If WrestleMania is, you know, a yearly holiday for you, congratulations, enjoy, it's coming up, it's not your bag, that's okay, watch what is. Remember, let's focus in on what we love, and let's don't bicker about what we don't. All right, I got a great guest on this episode again. Returning is friend of the show, international playboy Bobby Colt. We talk about his run as Hans Mueller, his run in Indianapolis, Puerto Rico, and much, much more. That interview is coming up right after this break, so stick around.
Hey, you bums, we have to take a quick break.
Hillsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is PhilSingerGames, PhilSingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams. Hey ho, everybody. Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. We're joined at this time by friend of the show, the international playboy, Bobby Colt. Bobby, how are you?
I'm not doing too bad.
That's good. That's good. You've been on the show before, but I wanted to follow up because it's been a while. Years. And so I thought we needed to do a follow up and talk to you. I know the last time you were interviewed by my co-host at that time. So I thought it was time you and I did an interview. So let's chat it up. You grew up in the Midwest. When did you first discover wrestling? And when you did, who were your favorites? Who did you like to watch?
Well, this is definitely going to age me.
That's okay. That's okay.
I started going to the matches. My parents started taking me when I was 5 years old.
Okay.
And so that would have been in 1958. And of course, the big stars then was Luthez, Buddy Rogers, Killer Buddy Austin,
Yeah.
Argentina Baraka.
And at this time you're in Ohio, right? Is that correct? You grew up at this time in Ohio.
Yeah, right. I grew up in Ohio. Yes.
Yeah. So some of these guys that you saw when you were a kid, did you are there any of them? I've heard you talk about Bobo Brazil before. Is there any of them that you grew up kind of idolizing or liking that you got to later step in the ring with? Besides, obviously Bobo. We know you got to step in the ring with Bobo. You got to tag with Bobo. Were there any others besides him?
Yeah, I mean, like, well, of course, the Sheik.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
That I don't know if you want to say wrestled with him, so you never actually wrestled the Sheik.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
Yeah. That's true.
but Wild Bull Curry,
Oh yeah.
Fred Curry. I'm trying to think of all the different people that I worked with back then.
Well, let's pause there because I will forever toot the horn of Fred Curry and how good a worker he was. He broke a lot of ground at that time. I talked to Fred not too long ago, right? He's pretty elderly, right? But then it was funny because all when I talked to Fred, he was just selling. He talked so much about his drop kick, which I loved because, right, he did have a great drop kick.
Oh
And
yeah, I mean there's nobody in the business that did more drop kicks than Fred Curry.
that's right. That's what he talked about a lot, right? Because not only did he have just a gorgeous drop kick, right, with the height and everything else, but man, he would throw those like machine guns, just one right after another. And I can't remember. I can't remember. I asked him how many, what he remembers being the most he ever threw in a row. And I don't remember his answer at this right off the top of my head, but it was quite a few. Man, I always loved Fred Curry. Growing up in the Midwest and everything else. And watching Fred, I mean, by the time I watched Fred, right, he was a little older, but I still loved him, still thought he was great. And then later, diving down that rabbit hole, finding out his dad's, Wild Bull Curry, that was even cooler.
Well, the promotion he had in Columbus, Ohio, was my, other than just working a little a local promotion that is working out of Springfield, I was fortunate enough to be able to go up and work a couple of matches, TV matches that they were doing, and then ended up just staying with the promotion. And that's how, like I said, I mean, when I was a kid, Bull Curry scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
And when I first met him, you still have that, even though it's a work, you still have that tendency of like, wow,
Yep.
But I mean, he's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
He was a legitimate shooter. I mean, if he, back in the day, if he was in a situation to fight, I mean, the man could fight.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of that same vein, right? As like the like you mentioned the Sheik, right? That scared a lot of people. And then when you meet him, I mean, Sheik only kind of let that guard down for certain people. Right? I mean, he didn't. Not everybody got to see the true, Ed Farhat.
No. I mean, he protected his gimmick for, almost ever. I know. Fortunately, I got to work for Sheik's promotion after Fred Curry's,
Yeah.
and Sheik got it took a liking to me for some reason and stuff, and then I was able to travel with him for a whole summer around up in Canada.
Yeah.
I stayed at his house in Williamson, Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a great guy. I mean, of course, when I worked for him, it was at towards the end of the promotion. So, There wasn't a whole lot of money to be made.
Yeah, and that's a lot of people think that, right? But they talk about, like Detroit, big time wrestling, but they talk about Indianapolis, the WWA. Most of the video footage for both those is from the tail end. So a lot of people, that's what they think of. They think it's what it was, right? But both of those promotions, especially at one time, were major players in the wrestling business. I mean, obviously I'm very familiar with the WWE Indianapolis, and a lot of people, they only think of the 80s WWA, right? When it had settled down a little bit and nationalization was affecting everybody. But like, I mean, even in the 80s, they were drawing well, but in the 70s, I mean, the WWA was a powerhouse.
And same thing with big time wrestling. I
And
mean,
same with Big
Steve,
Time. I mean, yeah, they were running both of those. The WWA and Big Time were running during those few years when they were running the, against each other in Detroit. They were both drawing 10,000 plus on the same night in Detroit. That's unreal. That'll never happen again, right? I mean, with two promotions running the same town, same night, and drawing that many people.
Well, they always say a thing up there that, Cobo Arena, the house that the Sheik built, and which is basically a lot of this. That's true because, I mean, when he ran the promotions, like you said, from the 60s to the 80s, they constantly had sellouts. And Cobo, loved him because he brought money in. In fact, I guess I kind of like feel honored in a way when they built Joe Louis Stadium next door. We were the first event to go in there, and I was in the opening match of that. So, it's kind of like felt like it was kind of like a little bit of an honor to me that I was the first person to ever perform in Joe Louis Arena.
There's a handful of excuse me, buildings that, right, you think of when you think of wrestling, right? You think, the Mid-South Coliseum, Market Square Arena, different things, right? And to me, Cobo's right there, right? It's just, it's one of those that, at one point in time was a mecca. And of course, Detroit itself as a city kind of changed, and there's a lot of shifting stuff there. But let's circle back to you, right? I mean, you always, I you I've heard, right, like when you first were on the show, you were talking, when you got started, that you were more or less, you were self-trained, right? You kind of trained yourself by watching wrestling, studying wrestling, and then little by little, right, you got into some boxing rings with a few guys that worked and learned a little more. But more or less, at your start, you were kind of self-trained. Is that a fair assumption?
Because I there was no schools, so I took and just would watch it on TV, study that, and there was magazines. There was like at that time there was probably eight magazines, I think, it came out every month, and they were like 50 cents back then, but and I bought every one of them. I went and cut grass and stuff like that just to get the money to buy the wrestling magazines. And then I would study the pictures and, how they did the holds of the course, and that's how I got to know so much about all the different wrestlers. But but there was a local gym there that back in the late 50s and early 60s, they used to hold the wrestling matches there. And then once they got away from that, then it became a boxing gym. And I talked to the guy there, and he kept trying to get me to be a boxer. And it's like, no, I'm not doing that. And so he said, well, you can, you pay your dues. You can use the other ring. And he said that, to practice your stuff in. So I did that. And I had a couple other friends that was interested in the business, but never actually went on. And then even my first wife and stuff, I mean, I used her as a practice dummy. So, but yeah, I mean, drop kicks. I learned how to do that just by drop kicking the, top turnbuckle,
Yeah.
and kept, would take bumps and stuff and practice the holds. And then when I first got in, I BS'd my way in, oh yeah, well, I worked for Nick Tulis down in Kentucky, and I worked for, so and so in Tennessee. And back then there was no internet, no
There.
cell phones or to
Right.
call or whatever.
Yeah.
So they're just like, well, okay, and that's how I did with the Sheik. They were holding a show in Columbus, Ohio, at the fairgrounds,
Yeah.
and so I went down early, and there was nobody there but Sheik.
Yeah.
And I finally got his attention by, calling him, I kept saying Sheik, and he just ignored me, gave me his act. And finally I said, "Mr. Farhat, could I talk to you?" Well, then all of a sudden he, his head popped up, and he kind of like turned and looked at me. He walked over there. He said, "First of all, let me tell you something." I said, "Yes, sir." He goes, "Don't ever call me that again. I am the Sheik." I said, "Yes, sir, you are." And so I told him, my little bull crap, and so he said, "Well, if you want to work," he said, "I'll tell you what." He goes, "I got a show next Friday up in Toledo, Ohio." He said, "You come up there. If I like what I see," he said, "that I'll use it. If I don't," he said, "I don't want to talk to you again."
Okay.
So.
What and when you first, right? You got your foot in the door, you said, I mean, pretty much from bullshitting your way in, right? And saying you worked here or there, whatever. Got your opportunity. What when you first started work, what name were you using at first?
At the very beginning was I came up with well, when I worked for the little promotion when I first started, I came up with the name Bobby Cole,
Okay.
because what I did was I sat there and looked. I'm thinking, like, what can I do? And who was thinking of? And I was a Indianapolis Colts, not, well, back then it was the Baltimore Colts.
Sure. Yeah.
I was a fan of Johnny Unitas.
Right, of course.
Again, dates me,
Yeah.
but and I, the name Bobby, basically I took that from Bobby Shane,
Okay, sure.
just from reading the magazines, never meeting him. And I thought, eh, sounds like a good name, Bobby Colt, so I taken in whenever I went in, and they asked me, said, "What's your name?" I said, "Oh, Bobby Colt," and
Yeah.
so that's been 48 years ago now.
It's funny how that stuff happens, isn't it? Because it's like everybody now currently wants to think there was some magical inspiration for these names. Sometimes it's just like you got to come up with something, right? I mean, obviously, I've worked as and have gone by since Dave Dynasty. And at that time, when it came up, it's like it's almost like this pressure of, well, what do you want to do? Okay, well, I don't know. I don't know what I want to go by. I what am I going to go by? And so whatever hits your mind, some alliteration, right? Dave Dynasty. Okay, that sounds great. Great. Just call me Dave Dynasty. I don't care. And
Yeah, the only ones that did give you a choice is Instagram.
it's like it's Yeah, and it's like, sometimes there's not like this magic equation that
Yeah,
comes up with a
with
name and just
him, like the Red Rooster, okay, or Gravity Beaver. I mean, I'm thinking like, oh my God, this guy comes up with the worst stuff.
I think sometimes he just came up with stuff just to try to prove that he could try to get something over that sounded horrible. Just, I don't know, it's weird.
Well, I mean, I worked for WWF
Yeah.
back then, and never really got a spot per se. I was lucky enough to work WrestleMania 2 and WrestleMania 3. I don't know for sure. You know who Jerry Valiant was, right?
Sure, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Guy Mitchell.
And Jerry and I became good friends and stuff. We traveled together, worked for the Federation. In fact, we're the ones that built the whole stage, the set the ring up, and we did a dark match so the cameraman could get all their camera angles right and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was kind of a thing that, I thought, well, you don't get noticed for doing all that.
Yeah.
But it's like, but we did it. So, and,
Jerry is such an underappreciated talent. He was so great, but it's like, especially like in Indianapolis, especially, he did so many gimmicks, so many different, whatever, I mean, it worked as, the Guy Mitchell and as part of the Assassins and early on and then doing Guy Heenan and different, all these different things.
Yeah. He did the Stomper. He was the Strangler.
Yeah. The Stomper, right. And the Strangler. And then you're right. And then when it, hey, when they need another Valiant, okay, well, hey, he's, John steps in and gets to become a Valiant and, gets to go to New York and be a tag champ. And he was so versatile.
Yeah.
And so,
and you know, when they did the, I've seen the documentary thing that they did on, the Valiants I saw on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
They never even mentioned Jerry. They showed his picture, but they showed some of the different ones, but never mentioned that he was, part of the team, that he was part of the tag team champions. When they got inducted in the Hall of Fame, he wasn't part of that.
Yep.
I thought all that was like a slap in the face,
Yeah, I've long since thought that Johnny or Jerry, excuse me, gets lumped in with Johnny so many times that people think, I don't know, they think it's just the same guy. It's so weird. It's, I don't know. And then of course, again, WWE gets to write their own history, and if they don't have to. If they don't have to credit, John Hill, Jerry Valiant, why should they? I guess, right. But it's a shame. Because again, growing up in Indiana, Jerry Valiant was great. I mean, he did so much stuff, and that's not even mentioning the New York stuff. But let's talk about you. You told a story the last time you were on about, early on in your career, right? You were working some New York stuff, right? Some underneath matches that you got to work Ivan Koloff.
Yes.
And tell us about that, because speaking of underappreciated talents, Ivan Koloff, I'm such a huge Ivan Koloff fan. I think he is so absolutely amazing, or was, so absolutely amazing, excuse me, in his career and everything. What was it like? Because when you were working him, he's not far removed from that WWF title run.
Ivan totally surprised me because, I was just a skinny jobber, went in there. In fact, I'm trying to think now, anyway, one of the Fantastics,
Bobby Fulton. Fulton.
Mm-hmm. And I was, just starting together and we went up to do TV.
Mm-hmm.
But, anyway, whenever they told me I was going to wrestle Ivan, I thought, well, this going in there for probably about, 3 or 4 minutes, he'll beat me and that's it. And,
sure.
He came up to me and, back then they didn't, or even up into the 80s when I worked in first for the Federation, you didn't sit there and plan your whole match out.
Right.
It was done in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And it was based on what each of us felt about the other guy, that what we could try to do. But anyway, but Ivan came up and he just sat there. He said, "Just follow me, kid, and listen." And I go, "Okay." And I went out there and he took hip tosses. He took drop kicks from me. He took body slams. We did some fake pins and, I'm thinking like, wow, this guy's calling this for me to do to him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He was the nicest guy from what I, hear, years later, cause I never really got to be around him after that, but
sure.
He treated everybody the same way. I mean, with a lot of respect, he was they always called him Uncle Ivan.
Sure. Yeah. That's what you hear throughout his career, right? He was, all the way up to his death, right? How he was such a, a giving guy, a helping guy, wanted to pass along his knowledge, his experience. But I always thought he was such a great talent. And I love that he had a nice little run in Indianapolis for the WWA.
Yeah, he was a here for a while. He was a WWA champion here, and every place a man went, I mean, he was prominent in the promotion. He wore the belts. Of course, was never NWA champion, but there's only a few of those.
Sure. Yeah, but he was still, I mean, still a major player, right? I mean, he was tag
Oh
champ
yeah, oh
and
yeah,
everything
yeah.
else,
And I
right?
mean, and the guy could work,
Sure, yeah.
and he, like I said, he was given in the ring. He didn't just job people out bad,
Right, yeah.
and
And
he's a very religious man.
right, yeah. And it's funny that, people that obviously, I mean, if they don't know much about him, right? I mean, he's not Russian, he's Canadian. And yeah, I mean, what a guy. But going back to your early career, right? You were doing a lot of enhancement work in Ohio, and then in Michigan for the Sheik, and like you mentioned, everything else. But then you went to work for George Cannon in Ontario, as Hans Mueller.
Right.
Was this kind of the first notable push that you got in your career?
Yes, because I was, I was just doing the doing jobs for Sheik and stuff, and he, I will say, the Sheik, at the time and stuff, like I said, he took me under his wing and stuff. He was trying to teach me stuff about promoting. I in fact, I promoted some talent in Ohio that I got for him and stuff. But there was just no money there.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
So Don Kent called me up one night, and he said, "Bobby, I got a deal for you." I said, "Okay." He said, "George is running shows in Canada and Newfoundland and stuff." He said, "The guy that we had up there, Von Hess, he said that he's not working anymore. George wants a German,
Okay.
And I said, "Okay." He said, "The deal is, you're going to have to shave your head." And I had long hair down, almost to my shoulders. I'm thinking, like, oh my God, And I already had a beard, not real long, but anyway. So he said, "Just shave your head, dye your beard black, and get the outfits and stuff." And he said, "George," he said, "George will use you." I said, "Okay, that word used kind of get me into different some different things." So when I went up there to do the tapings, well, George only know me as a jobber. He didn't know anything else really, other than, I mean, he said I was okay worker, but it just he didn't think I would be able to carry the load. But Don said, "Hey, let's do this." So I go up to do the tapings, and he said that, "Can you speak German?" I said, "Oh, no, I can't. I mean, I'm of German heritage. My father was German, but no, I can't speak German." So he said, "Oh, okay." He said, "I don't know how we're going to do interviews and stuff." So Don told me, he said, "Just go in the back." He said, "We got about an hour." He said, "Just try to remember, the voices of Von Hess and Von Schatz, and Von Roschke." So I said, "Okay." So I went back there and tried to, get in my mind of everything, all of them put together. So anyway, we did a test interview, and I guess it was okay, because from then on, they told me, "Yep, do exactly that." So then I was automatically shot into the main events with Hartford Love, the Love Brothers. And Hartford was he was a big hero in Newfoundland, because that's where he was from. And we wrestled each other up there during the 3 month stint, because up there you don't have a whole lot of opening time for shows because of the weather and stuff. But we, for 3 months, we beat the hell out of each other every night. first time that I, got juice. First time I took it in the, actually got in there and realized being chopped hard because Hartford was stiff, which was okay because I learned from it, and, but it was an enjoyable time. The first time I made some good money, first time that I, was made a champion. I was, I think the second weekend, they took the, switched the belt to me. And, it was, to me, it was like, wow, I finally made it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And George had me going back up there every year for, I think we did it for like 3 or 4 years. And then, in the meantime, I get to go to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, well, let's hold up because I'm going to talk about Puerto Rico in a second. But let's pause because I want to talk about I'm going to talk about Don Kent, because Don Kent's one of those guys that I have always said and will for probably forever say is one of the most underappreciated talents ever in professional wrestling.
Yes,
Don Kent was so damn good in every aspect, and I mean, I loved him. My perspective of Don Kent was primarily in the WWA, right? The teaming with, Jerry Graham Jr. and everything else, which was so great. But, when you dig in and look, I mean, Don Kent was great everywhere. I mean, with, all the way from the Kangaroos to Puerto Rico to whatever he did, in Arizona. Not enough people talk about Bulldog Don Kent because he was such a great talent.
Yeah, and a great friend. I mean, well, he was. Don told me that, he took to me and wanted to mentor me and stuff. And because we had a show during the winter in Wheeling, West Virginia. And my car broke down.
Okay.
So I hitchhiked from Dayton, Ohio to Wheeling, West Virginia.
Oh, wow.
So we get there and it started snowing. And I mean, it came down extremely heavy. So they had to cancel the show. And so we spent the weekend kind of stuck in Wheeling, West Virginia in a motel because we couldn't get out. But from then on, Don said that, he really took to me because I, instead of just saying hell with it, I hitchhiked to get to a show.
Yeah.
But he was like a friend, a father figure, actually.
Yeah.
He was a great worker. Never really got, like you said, never got the recognition he should have had.
Yeah.
He told a story one time about Danny Hodge.
Okay, yeah.
Former world junior heavyweight champion.
Sure, yeah.
And so he was young then, and he said that, he went in to wrestle Hodge, and Hodge was signing autographs. Back then, kids could come up to the ringside, get autographs, all that.
Yeah.
Well, Don said he thought it would be a good idea and a little bit of a joke to take it. And whenever Danny bent over to hand a autograph book back to a kid, well, he kind of like, did a playful thing, kicked him in the ass.
Okay.
Danny didn't think that was funny. So he literally knocked Don out. One punch.
Yeah.
And that was the end of the match. That was, that wasn't the idea of the match,
Yeah.
It was supposed to go like a 15 minute, and then Hodge went in. But that was, Don told me, he goes, I learned real quick, you don't do that.
Yeah. I mean, Hodge obviously, right, known for, whatever, being able to crush apples with his hand and having this.
Oh, yeah. The man was, but like Don said, he took him, he said, I remember kicking him, he said, and that's all I remember till I woke up in the dressing room.
Yeah, that's funny. And
But
you mentioned, right, you brought up Puerto Rico, right? And in 81, right, you were in Puerto Rico, and you won the Caribbean title from Jack Briscoe. Now
oh,
that,
yeah.
I mean, that had to be an absolute career highlight for you. I mean, winning, number one, winning a match over Jack Briscoe on itself, but winning a title. I mean, Jack Briscoe, right, former NWA champion, one of the legends of professional wrestling. I mean, that had to be just surreal for you.
Well, I was amazed, really, because I mean, all I knew was that, because on that day, we did two shows. We did one earlier show on the one side of the island, and then we did the evening show there at San Clemente Stadium, in San Juan. The earlier show, they came out and told me I was going to do a 45-minute Broadway with Jack Briscoe. And, of course, I'm thinking to myself, what? What am I going to do for, I don't know what the hell to do for 45 minutes. Okay. But Jack, we got in the ring. Jack told me, he goes, just listen to me. I said, okay. And we did the 45-minute Broadway. And to me, I'm thinking like, wow, that in itself was cool to me, to be able to do a Broadway with former world champion, So we went to San Juan that night, and then we just before we went off the ring, because there we had separate dressing rooms, so you couldn't talk to anybody. The referee would bring a thing over, so okay, this is the finish, and that's you did the rest of the ring. So the referee came over and told me, he said, "Hey Hans," I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Jack wants to know what you're going to use for a finish." I said, "What? Do what?" And he said, "Jack wants to know what you're going to use for a finish." Well, you know how in the business people rib each other, and the younger guys and all that. So here I'm thinking like, okay, yeah, right. I'm going to win the belt for Jack Briscoe, sure. So I just told him, I go, whatever, I don't know. Because I thought it was a rib, So we get out to the ring and stuff, and we're getting instructions, and Jack sit there. He goes, "Brother," I said, "Yes." He goes, "What's your finish?" He goes, "Yeah, you're taking a belt." And all of a sudden I'm like, blank. And so he just said, "Just follow through. We'll do the match and I'll come at the finish." So we're going through the match and doing that. So he shoots, gets ready, shoots me in the corner. He just said, "When I charge you, bring your knee up." He said, "When I go back, put both my legs on top of your shoulders, put your feet up on the ropes. One, two, three, take the belt." So that's what we did. And, but, in the meantime, I'm like, wow, I can't believe I'm doing this, And Jack was another guy that amazed me, that how giving he was in a match. And another one that was a shooter. If he didn't want you to win, you weren't going to.
Of course. You weren't gonna pull anything on Jack Briscoe.
I mean, there's a handful of them. Jack Briscoe, both the Funks, Harley Race, of course. Of course, you heard the story with Andre said there's only two people that he was ever scared of. One of them was Harley Race.
I venture to guess everybody was scared of Harlan Race.
I mean, it was. I mean, let's face it. You look at the guy and you think like, okay, but his work ethic and the fact that he could go if he really had to.
Now, speaking of Harley Race, did you I mean, you obviously did you encounter him in Indianapolis? He came in for that run in Indianapolis. Did you encounter him anywhere else? I mean, or where did you cross paths with Harley Race?
Indy was the only place that
Figured.
I was, had any association with Harley. I again, hindsight's a great thing. I wish I'd talked to him more at the time, and got a chance to go work for his promotion, because I didn't, then, you didn't know a whole lot to who ran things,
Yeah, you're right.
but But I'd have loved to been able to work Harley in the match.
Sure. Yeah.
Ric Flair would have been another one I'd have loved to work with.
Yeah. Well, we talked about Puerto Rico, but then obviously where I most became aware of you, and it was in Indianapolis. How did you come to work for Dick the Bruiser in Indianapolis?
Well, I was in Ohio, and one of the wrestlers named J.R. Hogg. I had known, and he was just more of a fan of whenever I first met him in the business and stuff. But anyway, when he got in the business and stuff, we wrestled some shows. He called me up when they're coming through Dayton. He said, "Hey," he goes, "what are you doing?" I said, "Nothing, right?" He goes, "Well," he said, "well, we there's a guy who's supposed to come with me to do some matches in Indiana." He said, "You want to go wrestle?" Well, yeah, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we came over. We wrestled Hammond, Indiana, mm-hmm. and another town. I can't recall which one it was. The first match I wrestled with Bobo, which was easy because I wrestled him so many times over the years.
Sure.
Then the second match, I was in a tag team match with the great Abdullah, mm-hmm. and against Spike and Huber and Steve Regal.
Sure.
And we went out there and had a good match. I mean, you never met any of them before, worked with them, you know, so you're always thinking about, well, how's this guy going to work with me, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I got my money, came back home. About 4 days later, the phone rings, you know, and he goes, "It's Bobby Colt." I'm like, "Yeah, who's this?" He said, "This is Bruiser." I said, "Yes, sir." He goes, "I want your ass over in Indianapolis on Saturday." I said, "Okay." So I'm thinking like, all right, I'll come, you know. So I'm thinking, okay, it's money. I'll do jobs. I don't care. You know? Sure.
Yeah.
So I come over and had my match. And I put a hood on because they wanted me to do something different. So I put a hood on and went as a Super Spoiler.
Okay.
Did the match, came back to the dressing room, and Sam Menneker was still worth Dick at the time.
Okay, yeah.
And so, I took my shower, was sitting there, you know, getting dressed and stuff, and Sam came up to me and stuff. He said, "Enjoyed your match, kid." I said, "Well, I appreciate it, sir." You know, like that. He goes, "Lose the mask." I said, "Okay." You know, he said, and "Bruiser wants to talk to you and stuff." He said that, "I think we can do some business." So Bruiser came in and, he said, "I'm going to be able to make some money with you." I said, "Okay, good. Can I make some?"
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I like money.
Which, yeah. So he, you know, we did our thing and he's right. He did make some money. Not so much me, but he made some money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you had a good run and you're always near the top of the card. You held the tag titles a few times, right? In 83, then you won the WWA title from Dick the Bruiser. And right. What I want to ask is, what was it like working for Bruiser at this time? Because he was never known as much of a bumper. But in 83, right, he was definitely not bumping a whole lot. So what was it like working with Bruiser in the 80s?
It was just basically brawling.
Yeah, okay.
You know, yeah. Me taking the bumps. The taking and but you know, whenever what I liked with Dick and stuff, I mean, he wanted to work stiffer, which was good because I mean, I was, you know, by the time I got to that point in my career, I wasn't real light. I was more of a stiff worker because the people were so close.
Right, yeah.
You know, in my mind, I want these people to believe in what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, hit me because I'm going to hit you.
Yeah.
Okay. As long as you know, as long as it's not in the face, I don't care. You know, chest, back, whatever. But yeah, we took it, and he was different to work with. It's kind of like working with Sheik without, you know, getting jabbed with an object.
Right. One thing I've always said about Bruiser is he understood where the money was made, and that was in Dick the Bruiser chasing the title. Right. Yeah. He would always drop it to whoever the top hot heel of the time was, and then do the chase, which obviously eventually he would get the title back, and then he would drop it to the next hot heel. And so people see, oh, well, whatever, 13-time champion Dick the Bruiser, and they think, oh, what an ego. Now, I don't think that's what it was. He understood that people like to come and see him try to get that title back and get his revenge.
Right. Chasing the title was more than him having it.
Yeah. And it worked, right? I mean, you know, with so many guys, whoever the hot heel at the time was, and at that time, right, it was you. You know, you held the title. He was chasing you, right? Eventually would get, you know, well, actually, I believe maybe I'm wrong, but I think you dropped it to Spike, didn't you?
Yeah, I dropped a Spike in a cage match and in an
yeah, hour, so. Yeah. Which, you know, obviously, you know, at that time, Spike was kind of an extension of Dick.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I mean, just a short time later, things went
yeah, south there. Went south, right? There was always the issue with Dick and the son-in-laws.
Yeah. But, you know, I wanted to, after I got the title, I mean, again, I didn't know until that night that I was going to take the title.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what happened was, you know, we did it at the Armory.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the shows.
Yep.
Well, I guess we built that up enough that they sold so many tickets that they had to move from the Armory to the convention center.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Which made me feel good.
Sure, right, yeah.
Because people wanted Bruiser to see me, you know, get my brains beat out, basically.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I felt good that, you know, I was part of the thing that we sold enough tickets that we had to move to a bigger venue.
Yeah.
And then when that happened, he came in the dressing room and just walked by and stopped, and he looked at me. He goes, "By the way, you're taking the belt." Okay, thank you. Yeah. Again, like I said, it was kind of like a high for me that, you know, here's a guy that's a, you know, even sure. though the promotion is going downhill, he was still a big star in the, you know, world of wrestling.
Yeah, and it's funny, right? Because people talk about in the 80s, right? And they,
yeah, and the Debbie. He felt that I was worthy enough to take the belt and see what happens, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And one thing that's always bugged me is people talk about the WWE in the 80s being on the decline, right? It was. I will concede that. But the WWE on the decline was still pretty damn good. They were still drawing pretty fairly well for that time period. It's just their decline was like in the 70s, they were drawing, you know, 10,000. And in, yeah. you know, in the 80s, but they were still drawing okay. It's not like they were, you know, you guys were only drawing, you know, whatever, 50 people or anything. It was never that.
Right. I mean, we sold out the Armory all the time, you know.
Yeah, it was just, it's just a weird time in wrestling, right? Because TV was going national.
What happened was whenever a lot of people left, things were going a little bit more downhill. I mean, I'm being honest with this. Once I dropped the belt to Spike, which was a good thing because we were going to have a, you know, show our little battles back and forth for the belt.
Yep.
I wanted to run a program with Steve Regal.
Sure. Yeah.
Because, you know, Steve and I had talked, and then I was trying to bring the thing to Dick that, you know, we could have a series of matches leading up to a hair versus belt match because I was, you know, I was wanting to drop the belt to Steve too, you know. And I said, then, you know, we could build it up to the last thing. It's like, okay, I'm going to put my hair against the belt type thing. And then Steve would say, okay, I'll drop the belt back so you don't have to shave your head, whatever. But Dick never went for that.
Yeah, which one of the things that people always talk about is at this time, within the 80s, is that Bruiser was kind of known for not kind of keeping up with the times, right? Not leaning into some of the younger talent he had, still bringing in and using, no disrespect, but the guys like, you know, the Bobo and the Moose Cholak and some of these guys who, in himself, Bruiser himself, who were obviously, you know, right, you pretty, you know, fairly
Stay
old.
Too long.
Right, for a wrestler. I mean, Not saying they weren't an attraction, but maybe he wasn't using them in the proper way at that time.
Right.
Did you notice any of these frustrations? Right, because there's guys like Spike and Steve, which were getting a little attention, but you know, and a few other guys. Did you see any of these guys kind of getting frustrated with why Bruiser couldn't, you know, see what was happening with wrestling a little bit, and why he'd be sticking to these set ways? Did you see any of that in the WWE at that time?
Yeah. But, you know, most of the guys that he used were local, so they didn't care. They just got to, you know, they do the little mat. My mindset was I wanted to go someplace else.
Yeah.
You know, Dick wasn't willing to really go along with that. So, I mean, I left anyway, which is another bad story. But
yeah, well, we're going to get to that.
But yeah, I mean, after the deal with Spike, and Steve left, he went to AWA.
Yep.
Which I had an opportunity, early on to do, and stupid me said no, because I was trying to be loyal to Dick.
Yeah. Okay.
Roger Kirby came back in for a short time and,
mm-hmm.
you know, found out that it wasn't going to work for him, that, you know, there was going to be no program. So he just, like, forget it.
Yeah, it was a weird time. Dick was just doing whatever he could, right? I mean, like, you know, Spike left, right? There was the falling out with Dick's daughter and, right, Spike left. So, like, he just throws the belt on Stormy Grandzig, which was...
Oh, my God. I mean, you know, that, be honest with you, that was really when everything even more so started going downhill.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Stormy, you know, for had the look, right? He had a body, but he couldn't work.
No.
I always said
he had a body and no brain.
Sure. And then Dick starts using lots of copycat type guys, right? And again, no offense to these guys, you know, but, you know, like the Jerry Lawlers or the Gary Lawlers, excuse me.
Yeah.
And the Bob, you know, the Sergeant Slaughter look like and everything, just these different things. I don't know what I don't know what he was trying to do, right? And it's like Dick thought, hey, if Dick the Bruiser was on the card, nothing else matters. I don't know. I can't get in his, you know, in his mindset.
Yeah, he could not accept. I mean, and like I said, I love the Sheik.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
kind of the same stuff.
Again, right? The situation stayed too long.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And the main events, you know, and wearing the belt and stuff. I mean, he dropped it a few times, but not enough to, you know, put the young kids over in your other talent and stuff, you know?
Yeah. And again, I watched WWA during this time, and right, and I loved it because it was our promotion right in Indiana. It was our local, but it was still, there was times when even if you tried to be a diehard fan, there was times when you're like, oh, What are you doing? Why? You know, why that? You know, why? You know, why? You know, I mean, it's like I can make, you know, I could argue with anybody about, you know, guys like El Bracero or Chris Carter or Dr. Jerry Graham Jr., but it's like, you know, Gary Lawler, yeah, okay, right, he's okay, but why did Jerry Lawler look like? Why are you trying to fool people? And it's, so it's you know, and especially now when you look at it, whatever, but what we talked about, right, you moved on, and when you moved on, right, in 85, you briefly went to Memphis.
Yeah.
So now let's talk this through first. How did you go to Memphis? Where was that contact made for you to go to Memphis to work?
Well, that was the situation again that JR and his tag team partner left first.
Right. That's right. The Hogs, JR, King Harley went, had a nice little run there in Memphis going on.
Yeah. Yeah, they took the belts from me and Bobo.
Yeah.
And,
see, I always loved the Hogs. I love the Hogs. I thought they were great growing up on that.
You know, again, they were getting frustrated with stuff there. So they went to, you know, they had a chance to go to Memphis. And it was another situation where, you know, JR gave me a call and said, hey, you know, they were asking about some if I knew any other heels up there. And he said, I mentioned your name. And he said, yeah, I'll take him. He said, have him come down and we'll see. So
okay.
I just, what? You know, I gave Dick the option. You know, I wanted to get some talents here for us to be able to work more.
Right. Okay.
That'd help, you know, and on the promotion end of it. Uh-huh. And that was like, no.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, fine. You know, I'm not making any money. So I'll, so anyway, and, you know, well, down there.
Let me pause you for just, if I can, for one moment, right? The Hogs. Let's talk about the Hogs here. They went to Memphis. I think they went to Memphis before you, right? And
right, yeah.
They were working. Yeah. Now, eventually, right, the Hogs are working, and then all of a sudden, the King Harley's gone. Is this when is this when he went to WWE and did the Cousin Jr. thing?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking, right? And, yeah, and left JR there. Okay, go ahead now, right? And so the Hogs are there. You know JR, right? You've traveled with him, whatever else.
Right.
He gets your name in the door in Memphis, correct?
Right.
Well, go ahead then. And then, so they reach out and bring you to Memphis. Now, you go, right? You go and you're having a bit of a decent push going on just initially. But then all of a sudden, Austin Idol comes back. And then it's like all of a sudden, just like on a dime, they squash anything they've done with you.
Well, now, I found out that a phone call was made by Bruiser.
Okay. So tell me about this phone call.
Well, you know, my understanding, he just called Jarrett and, you know, said I walked out on him and, you know, without any notice, you know, and they, of course, they'd had a working relationship before when they were.
Yep. Yeah, when Dick was struggling in 82. Yeah, yeah. And Dick had obviously been to Memphis a few times.
So that was my understanding. That and then there was a one of the bookers down there had known me when I first started, when I was working for Sheik. Okay. That he worked for Sheik for a short time because he got you know, he started thinking, I guess he was going to run everything and was jobbing people out to his kids who worked, you know. And people complained about that because, I mean, they weren't big, they weren't anything, but you know what I'm saying, that he's just getting his kids over.
Yeah.
And we had a little bit of a dispute and at that time. So I just never thought anything more about it. Well, anyway, he was one of the bookers down there, so he already didn't like me from years past.
Yeah.
But, the, you know, like between that and the Bruiser phone call, all of a sudden they, you know, said, okay, we're just going to job him out, and I wasn't going to have that. I wasn't going to be jobbed out on TV.
Yeah. Now let me ask you, did you and Austin Idol – what was the deal? Because I've heard you say that you thought, you know, that Austin Idol thought you were still in his gimmick in Memphis with the International Playboy thing.
Yeah.
Did you already crossed paths with Austin Idol previous to this? I mean, had you worked anywhere with him?
I worked Idol back whenever he worked for a promotion that came into Ohio for a short time. And I was still working as Hans Mueller back then.
Okay.
And I worked for the promotion. They wanted me to go to, I think they were going back to Alabama, Louisiana area at that time, because they didn't do any good in Ohio.
Okay.
So they, you know, they asked me if I wanted to go. And I said, well, you know, I would contact them after I got done with my run with George, because I was due to go back to Canada again for, you know, 3 or 4 months.
Okay.
But anyhow, there was a deal on there to where George told me that he did not want me losing on TV.
Okay.
Because he had planned to go into Ohio himself at some point.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously, right? Like Toledo's, that's just a skip away from Ontario, right? That's not that far.
Yeah. So I just told him, I said, I don't mind doing the job for you, but I got to do it in a way that, you know, I don't look bad.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Not just a pin in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that. He didn't like that. When I said I wouldn't do it, just do a job on TV. I'll give you the match, but it's got to be done a certain way.
Okay.
So, I guess that's stuck in his mind after years later, whenever I did the Bobby Colt thing, whatever. But, I don't know so much maybe with him because we didn't really talk, but the match went the way. I mean, they showed it on YouTube and stuff before.
Yeah.
I didn't care. I did the job for him because of his status at the time. So, you know, but Tommy Gilbert was mm-hmm. a referee down there then.
Sure.
And Tommy was a real nice guy.
Yeah.
In fact, after the match, I came back. He said, "I can't friggin' believe they did that." I said, "What?" He goes, "They could have ran a program with you guys, you know." And he said, "And made some money from it."
Right, which is how it seemed on TV, right? That it almost it felt like, right, Austin Idol's coming back, so there would be this, you know, Austin Idol, Bobby Colt thing over this Playboy type deal. It felt like that was what they were doing.
Yeah.
Where it was going to kind of go, right? This little bit of a run with you two, but it didn't happen, right? I mean, essentially, I kind of almost squashed you. And then that was it. It was done. And you were kind of, you know, gone for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, because after that match is when they decided they're going to, you know, start have me lose all the matches, and they wanted me to lose on TV, and I told them that's not going to happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, you came back a couple times, right? And and that's what happened, right? I mean, you essentially they weren't using you the way they were using you, right? And that I was going to ask you, right? But I think you kind of almost answered this. Right, that when you came back after the Idol thing, right, J.R. Hogg was also on the show, but you kind of, I mean, I guess you guys were kind of traveling together, right? Is that fair to say? Yeah, okay. But yeah, they weren't using you the same after the Idol thing. It's a little peculiar, right? I guess that Austin Idol, I mean, previously knows you as Hans Mueller, then sees the Bobby Colt thing, thanks you. Took that from him, I guess. I don't know. Even though, I mean, you've whatever it might be, but well, obviously,
it was just the idea. Like I said, the combination of I think the Bruiser phone call, the
right, yeah,
with the Booker that I'd had some heat with, I guess, you know, years earlier,
yeah. And Austin Idol's, he's a name in Memphis. Right, he'd been in and out.
Right, right.
So many times, right? He had some clout in Memphis, and you know, it is what it is, I guess. It was just so weird because, like, you were there, looked like they were kind of got to get behind you, and then it's just like as soon as it kind of started, it bam, it was gone, and then here you were, you Austin Idol kind of squashes you, and it's just a little peculiar. When you watch it in hindsight and how it worked out, but I mean,
you've been in business long enough to know that, you know, you take it and I don't play politics good.
Yeah,
that's why I never went into politics because And I felt that I wanted to protect my International Playboy Bobby Colt image. And that's why I refused to lose on TV.
Yeah.
Because I know if they did that every friggin' week, they were going to have me do a job for somebody.
Right.
And I wasn't, I wasn't going to do that. I mean, it ended up, hurt me more in the long run, maybe, but I don't care because, there's no film out there with me losing every week.
Yeah. Well, it was also, I mean, also, though, it was a very weird time in wrestling, right? Where territories were starting to dry up.
Right.
And things were, territories were going under. And then we're talking the mid 80s or so. I mean, you did start doing some enhancement stuff for WWE. Was this kind of because, I mean, that was really that was the only bookings out there, right? Because territories were, there weren't.
They were dying. I mean,
there weren't
there
many.
There was some there, but as far as, and I, after the deal in Memphis, I will say that I became discouraged.
Yeah.
Because the fact that I thought that, I was going to be able to do a run there. I've never said I was a great worker. I mean, I could work matches. I'm no Ric Flair, even though I tried to emulate him a lot. Tommy Gilbert, like you said, he tried to get me to go to Bill Watts.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I said, Tommy, I said, I just need to take a break, the way everything is gone, I'm just discouraged. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, in hindsight, yeah, I probably should have went to Watson, seen what happened there. Cause a couple of friends I had, the Davidson brothers, worked some for him and they made money and enjoyed it. But of course, back then there's, if you lost communication with somebody, you couldn't just get on the internet and find them.
Yeah, right.
But again, that a situation there, though, that Jerry Valiant was a part of getting me in with the Federation because he was given the job of setting the ring up in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, you want to go along? Help me with the ring and do some other stuff. Well, I mean, so it's like, hey, I'll do that. So we did that. They didn't have an announcer. So Pat Patterson asked me, he said, do you have a suit jacket and all that kind of stuff? I said, well, yeah, I do have. He said, I need you to announce. He said, you think you could do that? Well, I give it a shot, all right? So I went up there and did the announcing for the matches and stuff, and then that was my job for a little bit, doing announcing. If we went to a place that had an announcer, they showed a referee that I was refereeing matches.
Yeah.
Then Pat started to put me in matches, opening matches and stuff, or fill-ins for somebody else. And I started having a little bit better feeling, thinking like maybe, this might be something that could build into something.
Yeah.
Well, Pat and I got along okay, and the history of what they say about Pat and all the types of stuff.
Yeah.
Pat never approached me in any way other than respectful manner of the business. But anyway, Pat took it in. He had me in matches that I was doing broadways with other wrestlers, which, again, like I said, made me kind of feel like maybe this is a step up.
Yeah.
Then we did the two WrestleManias, and then Jay Strongbow was back in the picture there as a one of the officials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jay and I, for some reason, had not liked each other. He didn't like me. I don't know what I didn't have a problem with him, but he, for some reason, back in the Sheik days when he was working for Sheik, he didn't like me. I guess he thought I was one of Sheik's boys or whatever. But in any case, that carried on. Of course, I'm not the only one. Jay screwed over a lot of people. he ruined a lot of careers. Whenever he was in the picture, then that's when I noticed that I wouldn't get matches. Or I take it into wouldn't announce or referee. Or I just sat around. When Pat was there, then it was a different situation. So it was just going to be a cluster, And then between WrestleMania and the next time we worked was 4 months.
Yeah.
And I decided, I can't live like this,
Yeah. Well, and talk to me when Jerry Graham Jr. Bought into WWA, moved it to Toledo or Detroit and then Toledo, did the Bruiser Bellum. Was there ever any talks about you doing anything with them? Or what was, did
you know,
I
took it and, I did what I thought was right at the time. I called Bruiser, I kind of apologized for, hey, I did give you the option and you never, responded with me other than, no, I've got other things I'm going to do. And I said that I kind of felt disrespected with what I've done for you, as far as the promotion goes. I said, but I'll be the man. I'll apologize for, walking away,
Yeah.
I said, even though I felt that I was right to do so. You had your chance and stuff. And he goes, we got people we need. He goes, we need you. We'll call you. Fine. I'm just trying to, be the man in this situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I didn't bother with, I didn't have Jerry's number or anything anyhow, or Don Kent's anymore, because, over the years, people change numbers or whatever.
Yeah.
So I just, and I figured with Dick in on it, it wasn't going to do me any good anyhow.
Sure. Yeah.
So I just let it go. And I've talked to Jerry quite a bit on the Facebook since, mm-hmm. In recent years, and he's like, "Yeah, I would love to have you up there,"
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, Dick wasn't the only one making decisions and stuff.
Yeah. Well, right.
But he was part of it, so therefore, there would be a conflict there,
Yeah. Well, and you kept, you worked a little longer, right? Worked some independent shows in the Midwest, right? You worked, particularly for PWI, WCWO. You did a lot of work for those guys in Indiana. But what ultimately led to you end up hanging up the boots and retiring?
Yeah, I was on the as far as I guess total. When I finally retired, I had almost 40 years.
Yeah,
when I actually said this is it. So, never made it to the top, what I considered, WWF, NWA. If I went to the AWA, I guess in my own mind, I'm thinking that I think I could have did well there.
Yeah.
Because of my gimmick, if nothing else. And Verma's desert for talent.
Yeah.
But, I think as I sit back and think, my feeling is that the Lord had more plans for me than just being in the ring.
Yeah.
So it led to, me being, working for the Department of Corrections for, 35 years.
Yeah. Well, nonetheless, no matter how you want to you want to portray it. You had a solid long career. Obviously to those of us who grew up in the Midwest, watching a lot of that, you were a guy, right? I mean, you were in WWA, you were in Detroit, even down, right? I mean, I was watching the PWI, the WCWO, the stuff on local access, watching you even to those years, right? I mean, doing Blackjack Colt and different things, and different things like that, and stuff like that. It's like, we remember you, right? No shame in that. I mean, there's tons of guys that have got a lot less than that. And I know, I mean, I always know you had kind of a closeness with WCWO, Don Basher, right, who passed away a few years ago.
That'll
But
be 5 years. I can't believe
yeah, it's wild. It's
it.
weird to think. So I mean, I know you got out to some of those shows at that time, but since then, I mean, do you ever get out to any local shows or events to see any of the boys, the fans? Do you see all of them?
I've gone to the memorial show a couple times,
The Basher
to see
Memorial
some of the,
Shows. Yeah.
yeah. I mean, Don and I were friends on and off. We, had a love-hate relationship, for because of our views on the promotion that what I had as opposed to what he had. Because I wanted to progress. I wanted to take more towns, and
Yeah,
because at the
yeah.
time he, the WCWO was really the only promotion,
Yeah.
and he could have took over Indiana.
Sure. Yep.
We had some different ideas on how to go about it and stuff. But anyhow, like I said, we still remain friends.
Yeah.
We came a little bit closer a few months before he died, which I'm thankful for. But we his son
Joey Owens.
has taken that promotion to new heights. I mean, they have
Yeah.
really improved that a lot. They're getting all kinds of shows. They're doing the Comic Cons. I mean, so he's really brought that around.
Yeah. I always knew Don, right? I knew Don a lot. And pretty well, whatever else. But yeah, I was closer to Joey, right? I mean, he was closer to my age, closer to my mindset. I always just gelled a little more with Joey. And yeah, Joey's always been a good guy. And I know a lot of people not in Indiana, all this may not mean much, but right? I mean, Don Basher, love him or hate him, was such a big fixture in Indiana wrestling for quite a while.
For good, I mean, 20 years there. I mean, his promotion has lasted longer than what Bruiser did.
Yeah, he was the first quote unquote independent type promotion or whatever you want to call it that I ever knew of, right? After, I mean, he was the first after, and I mean, I knew of Bruiser or whatever, right? Being the local promotion, but Basher was the next guy that I knew of promoting shows, and he was on, local access, or local Indianapolis TV for a long time, and different things, and ran, a few towns here and there and whatever else. And then, of course I knew a Joey and everything else, and got to know Joey from being in the business more than Don even. But yeah, I mean, he was just, again, people have different opinions of him, but whatever. He was, everybody knows of Don Basher in Indiana. He filled a gap after Bruiser. He was, and that's not, I'm not disrespecting some other guys, right? We spoke of PWI with, Dan Garza and Austin James, or excuse me, Dallas James, and some of those guys. They had some great stuff. And if you go out, and a lot of their stuff's on YouTube, right? And you can go out there and see some of that Blackjack Colt stuff, and it's out there. And I'm not knocking those guys, because they did some fun stuff too. There was this there
Well,
was
you
a
know, Don was more resilient about keeping at it.
yeah he yeah he
I
had
mean,
a
he would take his jobs. I mean, sometimes he'd work two jobs, and that money would go into the promotion,
yeah
And I mean, I respected him for the fact that he would do that. And we ran some towns together. And of course, like anything, you have some conflict there, and that's
Yeah, yeah. Like I said,
but.
everybody's got opinions of Don Basher. I worked for Don Basher a few times, never had any issue with him. So
No,
I
the
know
thing
what.
was is that, like at his funeral, that some of the people that spoke, wasn't as many people there as I thought should have been, but that's my opinion. But he gave so many guys chances to live their dream to be in wrestling. I mean, it didn't, it's not the WWE or NWA, whatever, but he still gave them a chance to get in there, perform, learn about the business and stuff. And, like you said, love him or hate him, he gave hundreds of guys chances to live their dream, and for a
Yeah,
short, short time.
especially for those guys kind of that were around when I was around. It was a weird time because there wasn't a lot of places to try to work.
No.
And Don was one. He gave me some chances. Bobo Brazil Jr., Calypso Jim was
Yeah.
running some shows. He gave me some chances. Jason Maples was running in Marion. Jerry Wilson was running in Columbia. There was just a few handful of guys in Indiana, and those were that was it. And so if you wanted to get some time and get some shows, that was it. And all those guys, they all gave me chances. And I appreciate them for them. Like I said, none of them never did wrong by me. I never had a problem with Don Basher. He booked me. I worked. I I've never had a problem with him. So I you know what for whatever it, if anybody has a problem with that, that's between him and them or whatever. That affect me.
No, and like I
Don.
said, though,
I mean, Don did
they,
my show. I have an
yeah.
interview. We have an interview on my show with Don. He came on and did it and everything else. And as I said, I love Joey. I've always got along great with Joey. And I just, I mean, I from my personal experience, I don't have anything ill to say of any of them.
No,
So,
and Don was one of those guys that, he could kick your ass out one time, and of the promotion or something, and then come back a little bit later and be like, ah, yeah, come on back to work,
yeah, my only issue with Don Basher was that he had some Dick the Bruiser tights that he had bought, whatever else, and I always there was a, several times I always tried to talk him into selling them to me, and he never would. That's my only issue with Don the Basher, right? He wouldn't sell me those Bruiser tights, but but
I remember I went to the auction when they were selling that stuff.
that's right. Yeah, that's there was a lot of wild stuff. I mean, Chris Parsons getting the boots and different things, and
But yeah, I
What
mean,
a thing.
Don definitely, I mean, it kind of was a shock because I mean, no, he had been sick. I mean, I went down and the promotion a few times and talked to him. He wanted me to do some matches and stuff, and I told him, I said, well, I'll think about that. I said, but I said, you need to start taking care of yourself, and had some issues. We would talk on the phone and stuff like that, and had no idea that was going to get to that point. But I remember the last thing I told him. I said, if you don't start taking care of yourself, I'm going to come down here and kick your ass myself,
Yeah.
and
And again, I know a lot of this doesn't mean anybody to anybody that's not in wasn't in Indiana didn't know. But if nothing else, bottom line, Don Basher always respected the history of Indian wrestling. Did lots of shows where he honored, guys like yourself and other guys that worked for Bruiser, worked for WWA, He did a lot of that kind of stuff, where
Right.
he would he paid tribute to what paved the road and the past and the history, and again, I know a lot of people, if they're not from Indiana, the name Don Basher, it's like they don't, that may not mean anything to them, but everybody's got, every place has got that kind of guy, right? That local promoter. But Don for a long time, Don Basher was that guy in Indianapolis
Right.
that gave a
And
lot of
like I said,
people.
and I've told Joey and stuff, when I went down to the memorial show, because it kind of, I don't know, I guess kind of hard to go to those places now. But anyway, but I told Joey, I said, I'm really proud of you, man, to what you've done with this promotion. Your dad would definitely be proud of you.
Joey's like I said, I've always, me, I consider Joey a friend. Always had a lot of common ground. I've done a lot of things with Joey. He's been on the show too, and I've worked a lot of shows with Joey and different things. Because me and Joey are more the same age, but yeah, I've always thought me and him, had a lot of common vision on what, with wrestling stuff. And yeah, I think, Joey's done a good job. He's always, he's always done a good job by wrestling, with whatever he's done. But yeah, I think he's done good by WCWO, done good by his dad,
Yeah,
done good
I
by the
think
business.
at first, when Ron passed away, I think that a lot of people thought, well, this is it, but he, like you said, he stepped up, took it over, and took it to new heights. So
So I and again, I don't know, maybe I asked you this, but do you ever still get out there, and do you ever go to any shows?
no, I you know I think what it is that I'm. The last time I went down to one of the memorial show last year, nowadays, I'm old, fat, white hair, walk with the help of a cane sometimes. But anyway, when I went down there, they're having a big party thing out back, whatever, before the show. But I don't know if I'm. I don't say embarrassed, but I go there and stuff, and then they tell these young kids, like, hey, you guys need to get over here and show some respect for Bobby Colt. He was a world champion, he was a big star in India. And I'm thinking, like, guys, you don't need to say this, okay? These kids are don't have no idea who I am, but
Yeah.
I mean, it still makes me feel good that there's enough guys around that say, hey, to show me the respect for that and stuff. But
Sure. Well, Bobby, they all should show you the respect. I mean, whether they know it or not. I mean, I'm not speaking for the young guys. I'm speaking, what, for what you did, what you accomplished, and what you meant to Midwest wrestling, right? And in Indiana wrestling particularly, they all should show you the respect. And I know it's a different time in wrestling and whatnot, but you shouldn't be embarrassed, right? You deserve that respect for what you accomplished, what you did in the business, and everything else. So let me ask you, just, I'm going to wrap this up here and close it out. If fans, if they wanted to get in touch with you or follow you, do you have a way for them to do that? Or do you kind of just, kind of keep to yourself?
I really don't have any. I've been told a few times I should get a page, put stuff on there, and I guess, again, like I said, my thought was, like, nobody's gonna know who I am anymore.
Yeah, well, you know what? I don't know. I you know what? You and I may have to talk off air. I think there needs to be a Bobby Colt page on Facebook or whatever, just for people to, like I said, I mean, you deserve some accolades. You might downplay what you did, but it's important, and it's, trust me, to a guy that grew up watching late 70s and through the 80s, wrestling particularly there in Indianapolis, you deserve some praise. And So, yeah, you never know. I mean, it wouldn't hurt to throw a page out there and see what happens, and to see if
Well,
anybody.
like I said, I appreciate all that, and like I said, when I do see some fans out there, like when I went to show some of the older, well, they were kids, of course, whatever at the time that I was working. But now they're in their,
Yeah.
they're in their 40s and stuff, their own kids, whatever now. Yeah, they take it, and that still feels good in a way. Whenever somebody say, "Oh, that, I still remember the cage match you and Spike Huber had. It was
That's
great,
right. That's right. I remember a few years ago, right? I went to a show in Ohio, one of the Bobby Fulton show that he ran, right?
Yeah.
And there was all kinds of guys, right? There was, Shane Douglas's and all these current guys, right? And everything else. But I went and I was excited to see a few guys, but the one guy that I was so excited to see was Flying Fred Curry. And when I went to that show, I mean, bam, straight to Fred Curry, and I was like, dude, I love you. I loved watching you. You were spectacular. And I stood there and talked to him. I don't know for how long, and it sparked a nice little friendship with Fred, and I was very happy for that. But so don't ever underestimate who you might have impacted, and who might remember you. So, but
Well, like I said, I enjoyed, the fact that I was able to live my dream. I take it, and
sure, yeah.
at the time I really didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it. But like I said, now as I became older and stuff, that I have to say I gave all the give all the praise to God for giving me. And let me live, my dream of being a wrestler. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, when
you
you grow up a wrestling fan and you're a fan of wrestling, when you get to do that thing, it's you know what I mean,
yeah,
what more
but
could you
when
want?
you're a kid, you tell people, "I'm going. What are you going to do? I'm going to be a wrestler." It's
Yeah,
like, okay, and then they laugh at you and walk away.
and you did it. So I mean, and not only that, but there's footage out there, TV footage that proves it. So but
But yeah,
Bobby.
I've got to, like I said though, that even with my life afterwards, that undeservingly, I mean, the Lord's given me a good life, and I just have to give him the praise and appreciate what he's given me.
Yeah, I mean, what more can you ask for? And so Bobby, I appreciate you giving me this time and talking to me. Like I said, I know you've been on before, but I thought, it's been, like I said, it's been several years. So
Yeah,
I
it's been
wanted,
about 5 years, I think.
yeah, it's been a while. And yeah, I wanted to revisit and talk about it again because I just felt it was important. I felt it was important that people got to hear from you again. And I appreciate it. It's always fun talking to you. And
I know I rambled on. There was a lot of,
No, no, no. That's what I want.
a lot of
That's what I
different
want.
stories here that I could have gave you instead of just
Well,
rambling on, but
that's the stories are what we want. So that's the fun part.
Hey, you bums. We have to take a quick break.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to the Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guides for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The Outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the Outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
All right. And thank you to Bobby Colt for coming on the show again and chatting with me. It's always good to catch up with him. Guys, remember to follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much all of the platforms. Just look for Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or at The Dave Dynasty, all one word. One of those two ways, both ways, whatever, you'll find me. Go check me out and follow me. Also, go check out all of the WrestleCopia networks of podcasts. You can find them on your preferred podcast platform by giving them a search, or you can go to WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to ClassicWrestling.net to sign up, and then download the app on all of your smart devices. Guys, next episode, my guests will be Richard Vicek and Steve Verrier, authors who will be talking about their upcoming book from Crowbar Press titled Wilbur Snyder, the World's Most Scientific Wrestler. I am so looking forward to this book. This is going to be the perfect companion piece in my eyes to Richard's Bruiser, the World's Most Dangerous Wrestler biography he did, because, of course, you know, Bruiser Snyder, partners in Indianapolis with the WWA. Cannot wait to see this book, to read this book about Wilbur Snyder. And I also cannot wait for next episode to chat with Richard and Steve about that book and their process in creating it. Guys, thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing and supporting. And until next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we've brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.
Welcome to Dodgers, talking about Dave Dynasty, Bruiser voice stunned by John Lawson.